Cora arrived for her shift, but it was time for luncheon, and she'd heard nothing. Unusually, she hadn't seen Cora all morning either. She left Mary in charge of the reception desk and headed for the dining room, intending to ask one of the staff if they had seen either Matt or Cora. She passed Mickey in the corridor, carrying his tool bag. "Mickey, have you seen Mr. Bryant this morning?" The older man touched his cap as she approached.
"No, Miss Kitty. I did hear as how he'd been called to the police station, though. Probably be about that bother last night, I expect."
"Oh, thank you. Have you seen Cora today?" She wondered what had happened to her. Usually Cora would have brought a cup of tea for her mid-morning, but she hadn't appeared. The maintenance man shook his head.
"No, Miss Kitty, her hasn't come to work."
Kitty continued on her way, deep in thought. It was most unlike Cora not to come to work, and especially without sending a message. The implications of her absence made her feel quite ill, and her appetite for the steak pudding that was on the day's luncheon menu was considerably diminished. Only the knowledge that she had Miss Delaware's imminent arrival to prepare for, and a long evening ahead of her, forced her to eat. The rain of the previous evening had given way to a fresh, bright day. Miss Delaware's burgundy Rolls-Royce Phantom Continental drew a small crowd as it temporarily blocked the street in front of the hotel. The statuesque personage of Miss Delaware herself emerging from the car drew audible gasps from the gathered people. Kitty hurried out to meet her star entertainer, curious to greet her in the flesh. Miss Vivian Delaware had to be at least 6 feet tall, not including her rather marvellous hat. Her skin was the colour of dark chocolate, and she was swathed from head to toe in magnificent white fox fur stoles.
"My dear child, let me look at you. The last time I saw you, you were an itty-bitty baby in your mama's arms."
Kitty was swallowed up in the furs as Miss Delaware swooped to embrace her. Exotic perfume surrounded her senses. She struggled to make sense of the woman's statement.
"I'm sorry, I don't recall," Kitty stammered. "Of course not, honey. I mean, I am pretty unforgettable, but you were just a babe in arms back then."
Vivian released her and stood back to look at her.
"I can't believe it. Eddie and Ella's little girl, all grown up. You are just the very image of your mama."
There was a strange buzzing in Kitty's ears as she stared back at this remarkable woman.
"You knew my parents?"
Vivian had turned her head to supervise her chauffeur and Albert, the porter, who was struggling to unload her luggage from the car.
"Sure thing, honey. That's why I agreed to come here. As soon as I saw the address and your name on the bottom of that letter, I said to my agent, 'Bobby, I just gotta do that little preseason slot before we go back to America.'"
Vivian turned her attention back to Kitty in time to see her swaying on her heels.
"Baby girl, are you all right?"
Kitty was vaguely aware of a strong arm supporting her and leading her inside the hotel and Vivian calling for water.
"Breathe, honey. Are you all right? Don't you go passing out on me, you hear?"
She had a soft American accent, as smooth as honey. Kitty managed to nod as Vivian steered her onto a nearby chair while someone pushed a tumbler of water into her hand.
"Take a sip now." "Did you say you knew my father and mother?"
She knew she'd already asked the question, but Vivian's response had been so unexpected it made her quite faint.
"Sure thing, honey.
I last saw your mama before she caught the boat home. I waved her off at the dock side. Your pa was staying behind in New York 'cause he had some kind of business to fix up. 1914, I think it was. Right before the start of the war. You must have been, what, 4? 3? You had those great big eyes."
Vivian's dark brown eyes were filled with concern. Is something wrong? I've never met anyone before who knew my parents when they were together. Kitty's teeth chattered on the edge of the glass. My mother disappeared when I was six, only a couple of years after you last saw her, and I don't remember my father at all. Oh, my goodness. Vivian leaned back in her seat before calling out to Albert, "Be careful with that bag!" Kitty took a deep breath and tried to give poor Albert a reassuring smile as he hauled Miss Delaware's baggage to the elevator. The remainder of her staff beat tactful retreats at her apparent recovery. When did you last see my father? Do you know where he is? The whole thing was surreal. Do you know, honey, it's the strangest thing. I hadn't seen Eddie Underhay for over 20 years. We lost touch with moving around so much. But then a few weeks ago, who should I see at the club? Your pa. Older, and I don't want to upset you, looking a little worse for the wear. I didn't notice him at first. He was closeted up with some guy in the shadows. Looked like they were having an intense conversation. By the time I set finished, the man had disappeared. My father was in London. But you're sure it was him? It was impossible. No one had been able to locate her father for years. Uh-huh. I'd have thought he'd have stuck around to say hello or something, but he'd gone. I checked with the doorman to see if he'd left me a note or a message, but nothing. I thought since he came to my club, he would have made contact. You feeling better, sweetie? I'm so sorry. I had no idea about your parents or that I'd upset you so much. I'm fine, really. It was just a shock. I wasn't even sure my father was still alive. He never came forward when my mother disappeared. I've no photographs or letters. Nothing. Her pulse seemed to be resuming its normal rate now the startling news had begun to sink in. Surely Miss Delaware must have been mistaken. I expect he wasn't in England at the time, so I guess he wouldn't know, especially if you say he hadn't seen your ma since she came back here. He has dual citizenship, I think. His mother was from Boston, and he always spent most of his time in the U.S. I'm so sorry about your mother. Eloette was one of a kind, and she was a good friend to me. Thank you. If what she'd just heard was true, then where was her father now? Why hadn't he come to see her? Surely he knew where she was, even if she had not been able to find him. Kitty asked Mary to show Miss Delaware to her room and to provide her with refreshments. She needed a little time to gather her thoughts. She had hundreds of questions she wanted to ask, but right now she simply needed to think about what she had just learned. Her father was alive and had been in London so recently. She needed to talk to Matt as soon as he returned, then later she would need to call her grandmother.
Thank you for attending, Captain Bryant. Mrs. Cora Wakes's only known relative is her son Colin, and we are having some difficulties locating him. It didn't seem right to ask Miss Underhay.
Matt nodded and waited for the mortuary assistant to uncover the woman's face. This was the part he had been dreading. Memories of other dead faces, bloated and swollen, flashed back into his mind. He took a deep breath and tried to fix his mind on Cora, alive in the hotel.
Yes, I can confirm that is Cora Wakes.
The assistant recovered Cora's face, and Matt slowly released the breath he had been holding, glad the ordeal was over. He was thankful that Kitty had been spared the onerous task of identifying her late employee.
You say she was found in the river?
The sergeant grunted an affirmation as Matt followed him from the room.
Yes, sir, near the lower ferry. Normally, you'd have expected the tide to have took her out and round the bay this time of year. but she got caught up in the reeds, probably took there by the backwash of one of the boats. Same as the other gentleman. Accident? Matt drew a cigarette from his case as soon as they were outside the building and offered one to the sergeant. Police doctor reckons not. Large wound on the back of her head. No water in her lungs. She would have been dead before she hit the water. The officer accepted the cigarette, and the two men strolled a short distance together. Murder? Her still had her purse in her coat pocket, so it doesn't look as if she were robbed. The sergeant's expression was grave. Nasty business. Very bad. Do you have any more leads on the other murder? Matt asked. The sergeant sighed. Beyond identifying him, we don't know very much more than that. They've sent an inspector up from London to deal with your Mr. DeVries, and I reckon he likes him for the murder. A nasty piece of work, by all accounts. Perhaps he was simply in the wrong place at the wrong time. I hope you catch the culprit soon. Thank you, sir. I expect Miss Underhay and Mrs. Treadwell will be upset. Mrs. Wakes has been at the Dolphin for a good many years. What is this town coming to?
Matt blew out a narrow stream of smoke.
Yes, I'm sure they will be. What was Mr. DeVries's line of business exactly?
He would have welcomed a chat with the mysterious Mr. Smith, if only to rule him out of involvement in the anonymous letters.
He's an expert in his field, but on the shady side. Specialist gem cutter. Whisper is he was here to do a cutting job. And that Mr. Blass, the man we fetched out the river, is a gem buyer.
Matt stubbed out his cigarette and let out a low whistle.
No idea what the cutting job could be, I suppose. No ladies have been relieved of their jewels hereabouts lately.
He knew there were several country houses in the area, as well as the well-heeled guests at the grand hotels in Torquay.
No, sir. It's a puzzle and no mistake. At least we know he weren't the one murdering Mrs. Wakes, him being locked up and all.
The sergeant extinguished his own cigarette.
No news on who attacked Mrs. Craven either. Same modus operandi. Ah, well, sir, who knows? Inspector Greville is doing the looking into things.
The sergeant's expression changed slightly, and his gaze shifted so he was no longer meeting Matt's eyes. Matt wondered if Mrs. Craving's ramblings about Elowed had made the police suspect Kitty, especially with the anonymous letters. He held out his hand to shake the sergeant's.
Well, good luck. I'm sure you'll do everything to catch the man or men responsible. Yes, sir, and thank you again. Not a nice task on a bright spring day.
The man bade farewell, leaving Matt to meander along deep in thought.
Captain Bryant!
A breathless shout from behind him broke into his reverie. He paused on the pavement as a short man in his mid-twenties, wearing thick-lensed spectacles, caught up to him.
Phew! Nearly missed you, sir. Walter Cribbs, Torbay Herald.
He proffered a slightly dog-eared card. Matt took the card to be polite. Much as he disliked and distrusted the press, he had no wish to make an enemy.
I believe you were at the Dolphin Hotel last night to report on the vandalism?
The reporter's eyes gleamed behind his glasses as his breathing steadied to a less wheezy rhythm.
Yes, indeed. A shocking business. Miss Underhay must be very relieved no one was hurt. Indeed. Let's hope they catch the culprit soon. The crime rate in Dartmouth appears to have increased dramatically since you arrived, Captain Bryant. A wanted man staying at the Dolphin, a fire, Mrs. Craven viciously attacked in her own home, and now an employee of the Dolphin found drowned, believed murdered.
A faint sneer framed Walter Cribbs's mouth, and Matt experienced a sudden desire to remove it with his fists. Instead, he remained calm.
Yes, I had no idea the town was so dangerous. That must be why Mrs. Treadwell asked me to work for her, to ensure her guests' safety and privacy.
I'm given to understand that Miss Underhay may be implicated in the attack on Mrs. Craven.
The reporter had produced a notepad and his pencil was hovering over the page.
Then you are misinformed. Miss Underhay is very concerned for Mrs. Craven's recovery, as the lady has been suffering from confusion since the assault. Mrs. Craven is a dear friend of her grandmother.
He had guessed correctly that Mrs. C. had been waffling on about Eloed, and now the police were investigating Kitty's alibi. It was clearly ridiculous that Kitty could be involved.
And the body of Cora Wakes? Drowned in mysterious circumstances shortly after the fire?
Matt snorted. Are you insinuating that Miss Underhay is in the habit of trying to burn down her own hotel on a rainy night, and that she killed Cora Wakes because she saw her do it? I think you've been watching too many films at the cinema, my friend.
Walter returned his notepad and pencil to his coat pocket.
You can't blame a bloke for trying. Usually, the most exciting thing I get to report on is Jeb Carter being fined for being drunk and disorderly again. I have to ask the questions.
Miss Underhay and I are very close, and I can't be seen to show favouritism.
From the way Kitty had spoken about Walter, this was evidently untrue.
Will you be attending the jazz evening tonight?
Miss Delaware and her band were a huge success in London, I believe.
A reporter's work is never done. The public must have the news. I expect I shall see you and Miss Underhay there. I'm sure Kitty will be expecting me.
Walter tipped the brim of his hat before scuttling off down the street. On his way back to the hotel, Matt decided to call at Hubert Fargen's yellow and green striped booth near the ferry site. The little wood-panelled building was shaped like a fairy tale castle turret, complete with pointed roof and a pennant on top. The booth was closed, but he spent a few minutes looking at the bills advertising Mr. Fargen's motor coach tours. Every Wednesday, it seemed, he took parties to Torquay to try the refined delights of the glorious beaches and sophisticated promenades. On Fridays, there was a whole-day tour to Dartmoor to see the glorious wildness of the moors and to sample a delicious Devon cream tea. There were several other tours described with so much hyperbole that Matt wondered if Mr. Fargen employed Walter Cribbs to write his advertising copy. He noticed a uniformed officer searching along the grassed area of the embankment near the ferry and wondered if that was where the authorities thought Cora had entered the water. It certainly seemed to be the same place that the other man had been found. He would have liked to ask questions, but decided he needed to return to the Dolphin to tell Kitty that Inspector Greville might be calling on her.
Chapter 13.
Kitty was struggling to finish dressing when there was a knock on the door of her room.
Who is it?
She wiggled her dark blue satin sleeveless dress into place over her hips and looked on her dressing table for her necklace.
It's Matt. Are you decent?
Are you determined to ruin what's left of my reputation? She flew across the room to haul him inside before anyone came along the corridor and saw him there.
Where have you been all day? I have so much to tell you.
Without waiting for his reply, she handed him her necklace and turned her back, bowing her head forward, exposing the fashionable low-cut back of her dress.
Could you fasten the clasp on this for me, please? I have no maid tonight as everyone is busy downstairs, and I need to get to the ballroom for the start of Miss Delaware's performance.
Kitty, I need to talk to you. His fingers were cool against the skin at the nape of her neck as he fumbled with the tiny clasp of her necklace.
Is it about the body in the river? Such horrid news. One of the guests told one of the girls this morning and it's been the buzz of the day. They said it was the same place where that other poor man was found.
Mickey said you'd been called to the police station and then Cora didn't come to work.
She straightened her head as his fingers moved away from her neck, leaving behind the faintest sizzle of electricity.
Kitty, the body in the river.
He stopped speaking as she turned to look at him.
Who was it?
She suspected she already knew the answer, but dreaded the confirmation. The very idea made her sick. The gossip had said it was a woman, and Cora was missing. She hadn't wanted to believe there might be a connection.
The police asked me to officially confirm her identity. Obviously, they knew who it was already, but protocol has to be followed. I'm so sorry, Kitty.
Cora.
Although she had already guessed it might be the case, it was still shocking to have it confirmed.
Matt nodded. They're trying to trace her son, Colin. He's not been seen at his address for a few weeks.
Accident? Or suicide? What happened to her?
It was hard to believe Cora was dead. She was part of the furniture at the Dolphin, poking around in everyone's business, feeding people tea and biscuits, trying to be first to find out any titbits of news and passing the gossip whether a person wanted to hear it or not.
It looks like murder. The police doctor says she was hit over the head before she fell into the water.
Kitty gasped and placed her hand over her mouth. Hearing her fears made real, made bile rise into the back of her throat.
What's happening around here, Matt?
She watched as he paced about the room.
I don't know. I wish I did, but whatever is happening, it's far more dangerous than either your grandmother or I thought it would be.
Kitty sank down onto the chaise longue at the foot of her bed.
I knew Grams was keeping something more from me.
Only that she was afraid for your safety.
She was convinced the letters were to do with your mother, but she was reticent on the subject of your father.
With these events happening, I wonder when we'll hear from the anonymous letter writer again, and if the letters will become more specific.
You think we will get more now Cora is dead?
Matt nodded.
Oh yes, I'm sure of it. There has to be some connection. I don't believe in coincidence.
Miss Delaware told me she saw my father in her club in London the other week.
She didn't think she would ever see Matt struck dumb, but it seemed she had succeeded.
She knew my parents when they were together, it seems, and she says she recognized him.
She quickly filled Matt in on all she'd learned that afternoon.
Kitty, be very careful. Again, this can't simply be coincidental.
He didn't look happy.
We'll call your grandmother in the morning. She needs to know what Miss Delaware has told you about your father and about what's happened to Cora.
Do you think what she said was true? My father is alive and in London.
I don't know. She may be telling the truth. We can try and find out more over the next few days. I think it's time your grandmother told us everything she knows.
She caught sight of the time on his wristwatch.
I have to go downstairs. I'm late.
She jumped to her feet.
I'll be down shortly. I need to change.
He slipped out of her room and she finished her toilette before locking the door and heading towards the ballroom. She took a deep breath as she descended the broad oak staircase, her satin skirt swishing against her legs. The hum of conversation mingled with the music from the Dolphin's small house band to greet her as she entered the ballroom. Cigarette smoke hung in a pale blue fuzz over the white linen-covered tabletops, and the huge glass chandeliers glittered with electric light. Some couples were already on the dance floor, others seated at the tables. Jewellery sparkled on the ladies' gowns and hair ornaments, and the gentlemen were formal in dark dinner suits. Evening entertainment at the Dolphin was free to guests and at a small ticket price for visitors. A satisfying number of tickets had been sold for the opening night and the hotel was fully booked. she spotted Walter Cribbs lurking behind one of the potted palms and swiftly headed in the opposite direction. She had no wish for an encounter with him. Miss Delaware was due to make her entrance within a few minutes with her musicians, and it seemed that all of Dartmouth society was there to see her. Kitty moved through the crowds, nodding and smiling in acknowledgement to those she knew. It appeared that news of Miss Delaware's arrival had spread around the bay like wildfire. There were several parties that she guessed must have motored from Torquay. There were also lots of faces she didn't recognise. She made it to the small, low-set stage, just as the band were finishing the last song of their set, and Miss Delaware's musicians prepared in the wings to take over. The crowd applauded, and the couples on the dance floor resumed their seats as Kitty entered the stage to take to the microphone.
"Welcome, lords, ladies, and gentlemen, to the Dolphin Hotel. We are delighted and honoured to have as our guest entertainer for the next 2 weeks the wonderful Miss Vivian Delaware and her band. Miss Delaware has recently completed a residency at the Cat's Meow Club in London and is a huge star in her native city of Chicago in America. We are so fortunate to have her here. I'm sure you'll all make her very welcome. Miss Vivian Delaware!"
Kitty stepped off the stage to rapturous applause as Vivian strode out in a daringly cut, new-style gold silk evening gown. She nodded her head to acknowledge Kitty's introduction before launching into Night and Day, a huge hit from the previous year and a guaranteed crowd-pleaser.
"Champagne?"
A glass was pressed into her hand, and she turned her head to discover Matt standing at her side, resplendent in a black double-breasted dinner suit. His unruly hair for once was tidy, and she caught a glimpse of gold cufflinks as he adjusted his bow tie.
"You scrub up very nicely, Mr. Bryant," Kitty murmured, "and very quickly."
She took a sip of her drink and continued to survey the room.
"You too, Miss Underhay."
His deep voice so close to her ear called a blush to her cheek.
"Vivian is terribly good, isn't she?"
"Excellent.
You were lucky to get someone of her stature. How did you come to book her?"
Kitty frowned.
"I'm not really sure.
I remember thinking she probably wouldn't want to come, as we obviously can't pay London rates. But I think I heard she'd been a little unwell and had been advised to take sea air, so I thought I'd try. I only secured the booking a few weeks ago after our original booking let us down."
"And you can't recall who told you about her?"
She glanced up at him.
"I think I received a flyer from the theatrical booking agency we use. I wanted someone different from our regular entertainers, and it was a little last minute. Do you know, I rather think Cora told me she'd read about Vivian in a stage newspaper, so I wrote to her agent."
Her eyes widened. "You think it might have been some kind of setup to get her here?" Matthew raised his own glass and took a sip.
"It's curious, don't you think?"
Vivian moved seamlessly onto her next song. Matt took Kitty's glass from her hand and placed it next to his on a nearby table.
"May I have the pleasure of a dance, Miss Underhay?"
Before she could protest, he swept her out onto the crowded dance floor.
"What are you doing?"
"Walter Cribbs was heading in our direction."
Matt expertly guided her into a less populated space.
"Ugh, that wretched man. I expect he has a photographer with him too. People pay the newspaper for print copies of themselves all dressed up on an evening out."
Even as she spoke, she could see the photographer taking a picture of Sir Roderick Nightingale, the local magistrate, with his wife and daughter.
"Still, all good publicity and fodder for the society column.
Mr. Cribbs was keen to impress upon me your close friendship," Matt remarked.
"Better smile and look as if you're enjoying yourself."
She gasped indignantly at Walter Cribbs's nerve. The gentle heat of Matt's hand through the flimsy navy satin of her dress as he guided her around the dance floor made her feel a little giddy as they moved together in time to the music, and she relaxed into the rhythm. She wasn't sure if she was glad or sorry when he finally released her at the side of the dance floor when the song ended.
"I see our drinks are gone. I'll get some more."
Matt vanished into the crowd.
"Miss Underhay, what a triumph this all is. Your dear grandmother must be delighted."
Mr. Fargen stood before her. In place of his usual striped blazer and straw boater, he wore a rather old-fashioned black dinner suit, which appeared to have seen better days and bore a faint scent of mothballs. He was a stiff little man in his late 60s, with grey hair and a moustache.
"Thank you, Mr. Fargen. You're most kind. My grandmother is away at present, and I know she will be very disappointed if she doesn't return in time to hear Miss Delaware sing."
The man gave a tiny bow.
"Better news for her than the unfortunate fire, and, of course, Mrs. Wakes's terrible accident."
"Goodness, news travels swiftly in our small town. Luckily, the fire did little damage. But, as you say, poor Cora's death is quite shocking. I heard you made the awful discovery of the earlier murder."
Mr. Fargen became serious.
"Indeed, it was most distressing. I saw something moving in the water. I was quite cross at first, thinking someone had deposited rubbish or an animal carcass. I used a boatman's pole to try to manoeuvre it to the bank. Forgive me, Miss Underhay, when I say the shock of those dead eyes looking into mine."
He broke off and wiped his upper lip with a slightly grubby handkerchief. Kitty was relieved to see Matt arriving with fresh drinks.
"Mr. Fargen, may I present Captain Bryant, the new security manager here at the Dolphin?"
Matt's eyebrows rose by the tiniest fraction at her use of his military title. He extended his hand to Mr. Fargen.
"Delighted to meet you, sir.
I understand you have a motor coach touring business."
Mr. Fargen smoothed his moustache.
"Ah, yes, you may have seen my little booth. Day trips to visit the delights of our glorious countryside aboard the Daisy Bell."
"It sounds delightful. Have you had the business for long?"
"Quite some years now. I had to stop for a time during the war, fuel shortages, and of course the military. It's taken some time to build things back up, and the public expects so much these days."
"Mr. Fargen and I were discussing poor Cora, and of course that other unfortunate."
Kitty took a fortifying sip of champagne. She guessed that Mr. Fargen had suffered financial hardships over the last decade, hence his rather shabby appearance.
"Yes, I was saying to Miss Underhay, what a tragedy, especially so soon after the other. The police were examining the area near my booth. I believe they may have recovered the unfortunate lady's handbag from the riverbank. Most distressing, the whole thing."
He shook his head sorrowfully. Kitty exchanged a glance with Matt.
"Poor lady. I think that the police are trying to trace her son."
Mr. Fargen gave Matt a sharp look.
"Indeed, I was unaware. Dear, dear. Colin Wakes was always something of a disappointment to poor Cora, I believe. He took after his father. Drink and petty crime."
"The police think she met with her end shortly before midnight." Matt's tone was smooth.
"You live near your booth, Mr. Fargen. Did you see or hear anything untoward?"
Kitty asked.
"I, dear lady? No, not at all. Not in either case. I would have been secure in my bed by then. I'm not as young as I was, you know. You must excuse me. I see the mayor beckoning me."
He nodded to them both and made his escape.
"Another curiosity," Matt remarked. "That was a rather swift exit."
"Hmm,
Do you think he did see or hear something?
I don't know, but he's a slippery customer, all right.
It would seem, though, that he couldn't have been involved with your mother's trip to Dartmoor if he wasn't operating his motor coach then.
Kitty drained the last of her champagne. It certainly sounds that way. It could all be a red herring, I suppose. Nothing to do with anything. I must go and mingle, and also check up on my staff. I believe Miss Delaware has another couple of songs before her first break.
She walked towards the bar and saw that her staff all appeared to be coping with the throng of people waiting for drinks. Waitresses circulated the tables, and the cold supper, included in the price of the ticket for visitors, was being set out in the side room.
Happy that all was going to plan, she made her way around the side of the room, greeting people she knew and acknowledging others.
Congratulations on a fine event, Miss Underhay.
Kitty didn't recognize the speaker. He must be a visitor, as he certainly wasn't one of the hotel guests. A smartly dressed older gentleman, he had graying hair and an undefinable trace of an accent.
Thank you, sir. I hope you are enjoying your evening.
She gave her stock answer and moved on, but something about the man drew her gaze back to him, and she discovered him staring at her in a very disconcerting way. By the time she had found Matt, however, the stranger had gone.
Chapter 14. Kitty was sorting out the receipts and accounts from the jazz evening in her grandmother's salon the next day when Inspector Greville paid her a call. A tall, thin, lugubrious man in his 50s, with a sad moustache, he removed his hat as he entered the salon.
Miss Underhay, Inspector Greville.
He offered her his card.
Please come in, Inspector, and take a seat. I've asked for some tea to be sent up and for Captain Bryant to join us. Do you have news yet about whoever attacked poor Cora?
She took a seat on the sofa and waited for his response. Matt had alerted her to the possibility of a call from the inspector and felt it wise to use his military title. She supposed from the inspector's age and appearance that he too was probably a former military man. Inspector Greville appeared to be considering his response before answering her question.
We have a number of lines of inquiry at present, Miss Underhay. We are trying to establish a timeline of events of who saw Mrs. Wakes and when.
There was a knock at the door, and a young red-headed maid in a smart black uniform entered with a tea tray, followed by Matt.
Thank you, Alice. You may go.
She dismissed the maid as Matt shook hands with the inspector.
How can I assist you? Kitty asked as she set out the cups, ready to pour.
Thank you, miss.
The officer accepted his cup and took a sip.
I'm just attempting to tie up a few loose ends, so to speak.
Of course.
Kitty passed a cup to Matt.
Your grandmother, Mrs. Treadwell, reported some anonymous letters which made her fearful for your safety and that of the hotel?
Yes, the letters were very vague, but they concerned her. She employed Captain Bryant to look after security here, and I understand the police have made additional patrols.
Kitty drank some of her tea.
No more letters recently.
Nothing hinting at arson, Inspector, or murder.
I've handed the letters over to the local constable, Matt interjected.
The inspector set his cup back on the saucer before drawing a notebook from the breast pocket of his coat.
There are some points of similarity between the attack on Mrs. Craven, the murder of Mr. Blass, and the murder of Mrs. Wakes.
So I believe.
Kitty waited for him to continue. She wondered if Blass was a Dutch surname, the same as De Vries.
Mrs. Craven is an elderly lady, and clearly the nature of her injury has caused her some confusion.
He surveyed Kitty from under heavy-lidded eyes, and she couldn't tell what he might be thinking.
Mrs. Craven has described the person who attacked her as possibly being female but dressed as a man. It was the person's slight stature and high-pitched giggle that appeared to confuse her.
Yes, she mentioned this to us when we visited her at the hospital. She did appear very muddled.
She proffered a plate of biscuits.
Rather extraordinarily, she mentioned my mother's name.
A faint reddish tinge appeared on the inspector's cheeks.
Yes, miss. I believe your mother was reported missing some years ago.
In 1916. I was six. The war was on, and my mother was known to be somewhat bohemian. She was a keen supporter of the women's suffrage movement, and there was a shortage of manpower. I don't think her disappearance was viewed as a cause for concern for some while. However, no one has seen her since then, and all the investigations have led to the sad conclusion that she is almost certainly dead.
Kitty placed the biscuits back on the tray.
I see. And you have no idea why Mrs. Craven would think she had seen your mother?
The inspector appeared uncomfortable.
None. She disliked my mother, and in her confusion, she may have associated someone she disliked with an unpleasant event. It may also be that because I was in the room, and I'm told I resemble my mother, that she became confused.
She took a sip of her tea. Matt stayed silent.
I understand from Captain Bryant that you were working here at the hotel on the afternoon when Mrs. Craven was attacked.
Kitty raised an eyebrow.
I think that if you ask my staff, you'll find I have the perfect alibi, Inspector. Captain Bryant himself saw me here as he left to go and visit her. I have no reason to go around assaulting my grandmother's friends, and certainly couldn't have gone to her house and attacked her to return in time to pretend I had never left.
She watched as he made some notes in his book.
When did you last see Mrs. Wakes?
She considered the question.
I glimpsed her in the hotel foyer shortly before I left with Captain Bryant to visit Mrs. Craven at the hospital. Cora should have finished her shift at 4 o'clock, but a staff member hadn't come to work, so she had offered to stay until 8 to help out in the dining room. That wasn't unusual. Cora was often short of money and liked to take up extra hours. I also think she was somewhat lonely, hence her interest in other people's affairs.
You didn't notice anything unusual about her manner?
On the contrary, she seemed pleased with herself. I assumed it was because the extra money would be welcome to her, and it was a foul night, so she could stay in the dry.
The inspector duly noted Kitty's replies in his book.
Is Miss Underhay in the clear now?
She couldn't have conked Cora over the head and pushed her in the river either, as she was here at the hotel after the fire dealing with guests.
Matt leaned back on the sofa.
Miss Underhay's responses have been very helpful. One has to tie up loose ends and, as I mentioned, find a timeline. Miss Underhay's answers confirm the evidence given by your maintenance man.
Of course. Mickey saw her after we'd left for the hospital.
Kitty picked up the teapot and topped up his cup.
Mr. Fargin told me that your men discovered Mrs. Wakes's handbag not far from his booth in the long grass near the embankment. The same point where Mr. Blass met his end?
The inspector turned his gaze to Matt.
Yes, we believe that may be where she entered the water.
Her bag was on the bank, but her purse was in her coat pocket. Did you not find that rather suggestive?
Kitty frowned at Matt and wondered what he meant.
You mean she may have taken out her purse to pay for something, or in the expectation of receiving money, and didn't return it to her bag?
Was there much in her purse?
Kitty asked. The inspector drained his cup and eyed them both, as if judging if he could trust them with the information he was about to impart.
There was a £5 note.
Kitty's mind raced.
Cora wouldn't have had that kind of money on her person. She was always short of funds because she supported her son, Colin. He was frequently unemployed and often asked his mother for money. How very odd.
Indeed, miss. The inspector rose and collected his hat from the side table. Thank you for the tea, Miss Underhay. You have my card, should you think of anything which could assist the inquiry.
Inspector, the man who was staying here, Mr. Smith, or rather, Mr. DeVries, is he involved with the death of the other man?
Greville turned his hat around in his hands, as if unsure of how much he should say. The men were connected, but we don't believe he was involved in the murder.
I see. Thank you.
She couldn't help feeling a little relieved that whatever crimes Mr. Smith may have committed, at least he had not murdered Mr. Blass. I'll come with you and see you out. Matt escorted Inspector Greville from the salon.
You believe Cora had gone to meet someone to collect that money?
Kitty asked as soon as he returned to the salon. I'm not sure. He felt her gaze resting on him as he paced about the room. Inspector Greville is making inquiries at the bank.
The bank?
Cora's son, Colin, hasn't been seen at his address for several weeks. Cora was nothing if not a doting mother. If she had gone to receive money from someone, they wouldn't have killed her and left the money behind.
Oh, you think Cora was expecting to meet Colin and the money was for him?
Could be. I think the money may be from her savings.
Do you think he might have been involved with the fire?
Matt could see Kitty's mind racing.
Cora may have been intending to give him money so he could get away. Why would he set a fire, though?
Perhaps so he could search within the hotel without interruption for whatever it is that someone is looking for? Matt suggested.
Oh, this is all so complicated. Do you think Colin is behind those letters?
It's a possibility. He would know about your mother and her disappearance. Now, we need to call your grandmother before we meet Miss Delaware and her agent for luncheon.
I think you should tell her about the fire and Cora before I ask her about Vivian and my father.
Coward. He took a seat at the bureau and dialed. Mrs. Treadwell was understandably shocked by news of the arson attack, and she sounded genuinely upset over Cora. He passed the receiver to Kitty.
Darling, are you all right? Such dreadful news. Poor Cora. Do they think that ne'er-do-well son was involved?
I don't know if Colin is a suspect. The inspector didn't give much away. It does look bad for him, though. They still haven't made an arrest for the other murder. By the way, Miss Delaware's first night was a terrific success, despite everything. People came from miles to hear her. It's such a shame that something so terrible has happened to spoil things.
People are sensation hunters, sad to say. I doubt something as awful as poor Cora's demise will put them off.
I'm glad Miss Delaware went down well. Matt could hear Mrs. Treadwell's replies quite clearly.
Did Mother ever mention a friend called Vivian? Kitty asked.
Your mother? I don't know, darling. Not that I can recall. She had many friends, as you know, but never said much about them. She knew I disapproved.
Why? Miss Delaware claims to know my parents. She says she met them when they were together, living in America. She says she knew me when I was an infant, before Mother brought me to the Dolphin.
There was a moment of silence.
How very unexpected.
Miss Delaware also says she saw my father in London a few weeks ago, in the club where she was performing. She is confident that it was him.
Kitty's voice shook slightly. Mrs. Treadwell's gasp was so loud that Matt heard it.
That's impossible. No one has seen Edgar in England for years, not since he left for America at the start of the war.
When did you last see him, Grams?
Matt raised his brow. To the best of his knowledge, Mrs. Treadwell had always denied ever meeting Eloed's husband, yet Kitty clearly now had reason to believe differently.
In 1914, at the start of the Great War,
Your mother had returned to England with you. Edgar followed a few weeks later. Then Eloed sent a telegram to me from London saying Edgar was returning to America. She asked me for a loan to tide her over until he settled some business affairs. He could see Kitty's fingers turning white as she tightened her grip on the telephone receiver.
I caught the train to see your mother and you. Edgar was only present at the house briefly. I wanted to remind him of his patriotic duty to serve his country. Young men all over the country were queuing up to enlist. I was ashamed that a son-in-law of mine would not be amongst them. Your father, however, had other ideas. His mother was from Boston, and he has dual nationality. He had no intention of serving, even if the war would be over by Christmas.
You never told me any of this. You always said you'd never met him.
No. I didn't want you to think of your father as a coward and to bear that shame. I only met Edgar a couple of times in total, and that was the last time I saw him. Your mother was always reticent about where they had met and what line of business he was in. She was of age when they married, so of course I could do nothing to prevent it. It was bad enough that you lost your mother. I couldn't bring myself to discuss your father and his shortcomings. I regret to say that your father was not the kind of gentleman I would have wished your mother to have married. I'm sorry, Kitty, I should have told you. But you had lost your mother, and somehow the time never appeared right. No wonder Mrs. Treadwell had not wished to discuss Kitty's father. A draft dodger and a coward. Cold fury coiled in Matt's stomach. The man must be a complete scoundrel to abandon his wife and child and flee overseas to avoid enlisting. Then to fail to return after the war to even find out what had happened to them was appalling.
Oh, Grams, do you think all this unpleasantness is tied up with what happened when Mother went missing?
A tear rolled down Kitty's cheek, and Matt swallowed hard. This had to be dreadful news for her.
I don't know. I can't understand it. Why now, after all this time? Your mother only left you a few things, and yet someone must believe we have something of value. I know. There was nothing that anyone could possibly find of any worth. Certainly nothing that could cause all this intrigue. As soon as poor Livy is well enough to travel, I've insisted I shall bring her back to Condoles. Do say you forgive me for not telling you about your father, darling. I only wanted to protect you. Of course I forgive you. It will be wonderful, Grams, to see you and Aunt Livy. I've missed you so much.
Kitty made small talk with her grandmother for a few more minutes before ending the call. She replaced the receiver before retrieving her handkerchief from her pocket and dabbing her eyes and nose. He waited until she had composed herself. What do you have of your mother's? An old locket, some photographs, a few of her scarves, her fur stole, and my clock. A clock? Kitty smiled. Apparently, when my parents were first married, they toured Europe on honeymoon and Mother bought this darling, funny little wooden cuckoo clock. You must have seen them, the ones with the weights underneath and the little cuckoo sounding out the hour. I've always loved it, and it's hung on my wall for years.
What happened to the rest of the things?
You saw the letters, well, some of them. My grandmother couldn't bear to keep Mother's things around, but she thought I might want them one day. She had everything packed up, and they were stored in the hotel until the refurbishment a few years ago. There are only a couple of boxes.
So where are they now?
Kitty shrugged. I'm not sure. We had to move them. I rather think Mrs. Craven may have them. The storeroom roof had a leak, and Grams was worried about damp. Her eyes widened. Do you think that's what they were looking for? My mother's things? But there is nothing of any value in those boxes. Just some old clothes and personal effects.
Really, I should have thrown them out.
Matt wondered if that were true. Well, someone must think there is something in there.
He would dearly love to know what it was and why it was worth killing for. Kitty sighed. I wanted to ask Grams more about my father, what he looked like, but she sounded so upset about keeping the truth from me for so long. I sometimes forget she's an elderly lady.
She gave a wan smile. We had better leave for the dining room. Miss Delaware doesn't seem like a lady you would wish to keep waiting.
Perhaps she may be able to tell you more.
Chapter 15. Vivian Delaware was seated at a table overlooking the river. Her two-piece costume was chic and up-to-date, in a soft lavender shade. Her matching hat was pert and in the latest style, but her jewellery appeared somewhat loud for daytime. A short, rotund, rosy-cheeked man with a straggly beard, wearing a rather ostentatious checked suit, sat next to her.
Kitty, honey, come and meet my agent, Bobby. He was held up in London on business and only arrived here this morning.
Miss Delaware stood to embrace Kitty, whilst her agent also stood to greet them both.
It's nice to meet you. May I present Captain Matthew Bryant? He is head of security here at the Dolphin Hotel.
For a brief second, something shifted in Vivian Delaware's expression, and Matt sensed wariness enter the atmosphere. The bright spring sunshine highlighted the fine lines on her complexion, and he wondered how old Vivian actually was.
Vivian always neglects to say that I'm her husband as well as her agent.
Bobby resumed his seat as Matt pulled out a chair for Kitty.
Your little town provided a warm welcome last night. It's always a pleasure singing for an appreciative audience.
Vivian held out her glass for her husband to top up her champagne. Matt noticed she'd ignored Bobby's remark about her not mentioning that they were married, and her fingers were bare of a wedding band. Bobby finished pouring champagne all round and stood the bottle back in the ice bucket.
Yes, it went very well. Lots of people came from all over the place. I'm glad you decided to take up our offer.
Kitty's reply gave Matt the opening he needed.
It must be quite a change for you after London. How long were you at the Cat's Meow Club?
Vivian leaned back in her seat and sipped her drink.
3 months. My doctor felt the city air was starting to affect my vocal cords, and darling Kitty's offer came at the perfect time. She said she'd been let down at the last minute, and we had a little free time before returning home. I was looking forward to seeing the Dolphin and Kitty.
Matt noticed Bobby appear slightly confused by Vivian's statement, his expression alerting slightly.
I'm sorry to hear you've been unwell, Kitty said.
Vivian waved her hand dismissively.
Oh, it's nothing really, darling. You know how doctors do fuss so. I'm sure the air here will do me a power of good.
Do you return to the US when your season here is completed?
Matt asked Bobby.
Yes, back to Chicago. Vivian has a 6-month residency at a very fashionable club there.
It must be difficult with prohibition still in place. Bobby laughed.
Word is that it will be repealed before the end of the year, and Chicago is hardly a dry city, if you know what I mean.
The waiter arrived with the first course, stopping the conversation temporarily.
Did you know my parents too?
Kitty asked Bobby as soon as the waiter had moved out of earshot.
No, honey. I only married Vivian 10 years ago.
He smiled at her.
Your ma was the image of you. Same big eyes and blonde hair.
Vivian's gaze rested on Kitty.
What does my father look like? You know, I've never actually seen him. I could pass him in the street and not recognize him. That's rather sad, don't you think? Oh, sweetie.
Vivian dropped her soup spoon back in her dish and placed her hand against her breast.
I so feel for you. Edgar was a good-looking fellow when he met your mother,
dressed well, always had a diamond tie pin, blue eyes and a mustache. Vivian sighed. She appeared to be remembering the past.
Do you know why he wouldn't come and see me, or visit Mother?
Kitty toyed with the bread roll on her side plate, rolling bits of bread into tiny balls. Matt sucked in a breath and waited for Vivian's reply.
Darling, Edgar Underhay is, or was, a very charming man. I know he visited you and your mother in London at the start of the war, but then he came back to America. I ran across him a couple of years later in Chicago. He was keeping some very suspect company. Eddie always wanted easy money, gambling and high stakes. I believe he gambles professionally.
She broke off her narration to lean across the table and take Kitty's hand.
I don't want to upset you, darling. I do think he intended coming back to see you and your mother, but he mentioned that your grandmother didn't approve of the match, and of course the war made things very difficult. Edgar was not the kind of man suited for the military.